This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
Welcome to Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson from WDET in Detroit. Today, we want to talk about the inequality of environmental pollution, the subject that comes up an awful lot in cities like Detroit, old industrial cities that have for years, decades, permitted companies to foul the air and the soil and sometimes the water with the things that they make or build. A recent report in the Detroit News highlighted a particular kind of environmental concern that we have here in Detroit. Scrapyards, places that handle refuse from auto manufacturing and distribution, have always been a thing here in Detroit. Just drive down any of the major thoroughfares, and of course, you can see them. But according to a Detroit News report, there are more than 1,400 of these businesses in the city. And to boot, the regulations and codes that should govern the behavior of these scrapyards are not being observed or enforced. We want to talk about this issue today from two perspectives. First, we're going to hear the details about these scrapyards, who operates them, how they open, and how the city should be managing them. But then we want to get into the damage that these yards may be doing. Imagine just for a minute living in a neighborhood where these scrap yards exist. How dirty is the air? How dirty is the soil? What are the other things that have an effect on the way people live in the city from this kind of industrial use? And we want to talk about where these scrap yards are. What are the neighborhoods that have the most of these kinds of businesses? And who are the people who live in those neighborhoods? We're also going to take your calls today. What do you make of all the scrap and auto yards here in the city of Detroit? If you live or work near one, or especially if you work at one, tell us what that's like. Tell us how concerned you are about the possible environmental and health consequences of these businesses being as close as they are to where people live. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and at WDET or hashtag us, and we can include you in the conversation that way. A little later, we're going to be joined by Lapresha Daniels from Detroiters Working for Environmental Justice. She's going to talk about the effects of sites like these on the environment and on Detroiters' health. But we want to start with Sarah Rahal, who is the reporter who wrote this story for the Detroit News. Sarah, great to have you back here on the show.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
Yeah. So let's start with this. How big is this problem? Let's talk about how many scrap yards and auto yards we're talking about. And let's define these businesses. What are we talking about when we say scrap yard?
All good questions that I started with. It's about 1,425. We're going to call them auto use businesses because the definition is so ranging between scrap yards and junkyards, which operate almost relatively the same, but have restrictions on the size and amount that they can pass through. And then there's also used car lots, repair shops, collision shops, and then auto resellers. That's not a dealership. That's really a smaller known business that's occupying a sizable lot with a lot of parking spaces. Mm-hmm. And they could do collision, selling parts, a lot of rehab auctioned cars, and then selling them on the market. This is broken down into several different parts, but the majority, about 900 of them, are auto repair shops. Only scrapyards take up about 120 of that whole 1400 mm-hmm. number. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at a lot of repair shops, a lot of used car lots in the city, and they're primarily in the like east side and northeast side and middle of the city.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about what the concerns are around these kinds of businesses, how they're regulated, and the kinds of things that the city kind of expects them to do. And I would imagine that that's different depending on what they are, right? Mm-hmm. As you point out, a scrap yard is different from mm-hmm. A repair shop or an auto, mm-hmm. an auto seller. In the city, I'm used to us just, we call them all scrap yards, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's just kind of the language we use. But these distinctions matter in terms of regulation as well,
right.
don't they?
Right, you're not wrong. It's one business can do all three things.
Right,
and
right.
if they're doing one, they're likely doing more than one. That 1400 number is everything, every individual business, not which ones are crossing over into multiple things. Just businesses that have addresses in the city is what we track down. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of the environmental issues that raised the amount of concern that rose to this level of doing this article was basically, you know, how are they complying? Duggan, the mayor, Mike Duggan, put in a moratorium back in 2020 that we put a halt to new applications. There was just too many. At the time, the city's law department said that the businesses were multiplying like rabbits and popping up with no licensure permits. And really, realistically, the city did not regulate it before the moratorium. Mm-hmm. It was residents who raised the concern to the mayor and showed them this is becoming a problem in our neighborhood. We're seeing shops go and auto businesses come, and this is not what we want. And it got to the point where one resident I talked to said, one day I woke up and there was a business that had expanded into a vacant lot behind their lot.
Just took the lot.
Just took the lot.
And started using
started
it.
Stacking up cars. Yeah. And one day she said that he had the audacity to bring in a car crusher right into the middle of their neighborhood and crushing cars.
Yeah.
And that became way more than just a noise concern. They found that a lot of these businesses leave behind a really bad environmental hazard when they do abandon these lots. It's a lot of fuel, gas, oil. It's stuff that seeps into the ground, and we have to take care of it as residents to rehab it, to make it viable for something else when they do leave. So the city did crack down on it, halted applications for 5 years, mm-hmm. extended the moratorium 5 times, and started a process where they began creating ordinances that would enforce regulations to new businesses that were opening. This did not apply necessarily to all the businesses that already existed, but they did start putting them on the map and keeping track of them and issuing fines, which were a big deal because mm-hmm. these businesses operated as they wanted before that.
Right.
So a lot of the fines were for businesses who had parked outside of their lots, kept cars on the main roads and blocked entryways, and they issued more than $1 million in fines in the past few years. A third of those fines have been paid.
Yeah. I mean, that's a common problem in the city is that even when city government decides to try to regulate something or crack down on something, the compliance with the crackdown is spotty, right?
Right.
People don't do it. Let's talk about the things that environmental concerns that these raise, the things that go on these lots that the city and certainly the state through the environmental protection mm-hmm. arm of the state are concerned with. What are the things that they're doing?
I mean, it's traffic, it's noise, it's crime, it's blight.
It's a lot of things.
It's a lot of things. I mean, there's so much frequent neighborhood complaints on just the aesthetic mm-hmm. of the neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, if you go up and down Livernois, for instance, which is one of the main streets near where I was born here in Detroit, Livernois and Grand mm-hmm. River, these shops are everywhere. I mean, it's replaced all of the other commerce mm-hmm. that we used to have in neighborhoods like that. And look, they're businesses, right? They are employing people, presumably they're paying taxes and things like that. That's great, but it absolutely ruins the residential feel mm-hmm. that you would have in these neighborhoods. And I feel like in Detroit, where we have so many of these very wide boulevards that can sustain businesses like this, we just are dealing with more of it than other people are.
For sure. I mean, the part of my reporting, which was concentrated in the Midwest retirement area, that was the most dense area that I found, which had the most amount of residents that were pissed off about about this. Walking just from the Joe Louis trailhead, the $6 million beautiful greenway that we are building, if you just walk 2 feet from that, you will see a block on West Warren that is just filled with different collision shops. And I'm talking more than a dozen. And one even couple blocks down has a now open sign. They opened last week.
Wow.
And so it was just very telling to see with your eyes. And then once you go into these smaller corridors, like take Central left to Tireman, and in between you will find five different junkyards and scrap yards that are kind of fenced off with these humongous like metal bars. And then you see buses and different like tire stacks. And it's almost like, how do you even retrieve one of these vehicles from the tight space that you've collapsed them all in? And there's plenty of a community that is curated around this type of business. When I went from shop to shop, asking people, why did you open this business? How are you doing? How is there so much competition for this amount of business? The owner either wasn't there, they thought I was the city and immediately said to call the owner, or they felt that I didn't know what I was talking about and that there's, you know, this is the Motor City and there's plenty of competition to go around.
Right.
It really was telling to walk through a corridor and not see a gas station or anything else but this type of business.
Right. So what is the city's plan to change this? And you talked about the moratorium. People are not allowed to legally open these businesses, but you just referenced a business that opened recently. People, there's a great line in the story about people asking for forgiveness instead of permission. Right? They're going ahead and doing what they want to do and then saying, oh, I'm sorry, how do I fix this? So how do we fix this issue from a government standpoint in Detroit?
For sure. And I will talk as a reporter and not as a politician in Detroit.
Right.
But what I've received in response is that we are cracking down on these businesses. 32% is the city believes a heavy positive improvement compared to nothing.
That's
a few years
that's
ago.
That's the rate of compliance.
That's the rate of compliance. It's 32%.
Yeah.
And just back to your point, the moratorium expired this time last year. So there are 30 new businesses in the pipeline that can open now, that are in the process
that
to open.
That can legally open.
That can legally open. Yeah. We did make the rules a lot tighter of how far they have to be from another business. Keep in mind it's 1,000 feet.
Not that far.
And also, like, a lot of these businesses that already exist are expanding. And that's what's the majority of the permits that are coming in asking to expand.
Right.
So not only are we seeing new businesses, but the businesses we already have are getting bigger. It's getting to the point where the city is taking it seriously, I can tell. They're issuing fines and talking about issuing misdemeanors for the people who are not paying those fines. Mm-hmm. But the rate of closure, the city shut down 120 of these businesses. About 80 of them remained closed. So people did reapply and reopened and did get a part of the compliance to work through the system.
Yeah. I wonder also about the demand side of this. I mean, you mentioned, first of all, the number, there's 1,400 businesses, and you mentioned that you'd ask some of these places, well, you know, how could there possibly be enough business for all of these places to operate? What is the demand? Where is the demand coming from for this much auto reuse, essentially, kind of business
in
the city?
That's exactly where I'm trying to find the answer as well.
This
was definitely a starting point, but it's so much harder when you have the main players that don't want to talk to you about where the majority of their business is coming from. Majority of the collision shops said that their work was collision work or fixing up auctioned cars that they resell. Or they resell it to a next door lot that is primarily a car, used car lot. It is concentrated in certain areas, so it feels like there's an overwhelming amount. But when you talk to these business owners, they're doing very well. They feel that they can expand. There's enough business to go around, and also people specialize in different things, is the answer I got.
So what does that mean? In other words, some people are selling cars. Some people are repairing cars.
Some people have unique parts. Some people have an expedited way to get certain parts. And some people work directly with junkyards to scrap metal and get a return on that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone seems to be doing their own thing. No one really has a collaboration with other businesses.
Is there a concern that some of the demand here comes from activity that is also not regulated or legal?
Could be illegal, yes.
Yeah.
That's part of what the moratorium that Duggan put in place attributed, that this was fueling some crime, but it didn't specify what kind of crime.
Yeah.
It just specified that they were operating illegally, and illegally could mean not following any rules, whether it's parking on the city streets or occupying vacant lots in neighborhoods or dumping fuel and oil and toxic waste into sewer drains. It could be anything.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you that the rise in car thefts has led to this fuel in auto shops in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would love to see something that proves that.
That proves that there's a relationship
there,
yeah. You mentioned earlier the concentration of these businesses in certain areas, and there was a wonderful map that ran with your story, a kind of a heat map that showed areas that have an intense number of these. I looked at the map and thought, well, okay, these are areas with probably more of these big commercial streets, wide streets that you would be able to locate these businesses on. But of course, you can't look at the map and not see, a reflection of right. I mean, it's an incredible spread of these things. But where they're concentrated is in areas that you think of as more vulnerable than other parts of the city.
Yeah, and I think you have a great person coming on next that is
we do.
That can speak to this way more than I can. But, that Midwest Harriman area, it's so close to Dearborn, so close to where I grew up. And to just have that area not have any sort of incentive for other businesses to come and use that mixed-use land area. You know, it used to be industrial. Mm-hmm. The residents got it rezoned into a mixed-use area, really limiting the scrapyard number that could come in. It really limited to auto collision shops. And then there's the like Mount Elliott area and places that are almost near Hamtramck, but really concentrated in the center of the city, but more north. They have these huge streets, you're right. And it's like you almost don't notice it, but I promise that if you saw like a Mattress Firm next to a Mattress Firm, you'd be like, what's going on?
Right.
And
right, that wouldn't happen.
It doesn't seem like that's the case here. Like, when I asked to speak to the zoning appeals person of Detroit, I just got directed back to the same building director, even though I wanted to ask what's changing and who's approving these businesses and where they're going.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Sarah Hall. Mm-hmm. Reporter with the Detroit News. I know you're working still on this story and probably will have more for us soon, but I really appreciate you coming in to talk about this really wonderful exposition of what's going on with scrapyards. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking about scrapyards and the environmental damage they may be doing to neighborhoods here in Detroit. Lapresha Barry Daniels, who is executive director of Detroiters Working for Environmental Justice, is going to join to talk about that environmental impact and the disparate environmental impact that you see based on race and poverty in neighborhoods in Detroit. We also want to continue to take your calls and social media comments. Give us a call at 313-577-1019. Let us know what you think about not just scrap yards and auto shops in Detroit, but maybe other businesses that are in your neighborhood that you have a concern about the impact that they're having on the environment, the air, the soil. It's something that so many of us in Detroit live with every day. You can also go to Twitter and at WDET, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
This is Created Equal from 101.9 WDET in Detroit. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad that you have joined us. We're talking today about environmental justice, and we're talking about a particular issue that has an impact on the environment here in Detroit, the prevalence of scrap yards and auto yards here in the city. A recent report in the Detroit News quantified how big that problem is. 1,400 of these businesses in the city, only 32% of them are in compliance with the city's codes and regulations. We were talking about how this happens and what the city's trying to do to bring some of these businesses at least into the fold of at least doing what they're supposed to do to not have a negative effect on the neighborhoods around them. But, of course, the work itself is quite dirty in many of these businesses. And when you concentrate them in an area, I think we all understand the risks to the people who live there. That's why we want to continue the conversation here on Created Equal. We've got Sarah Rahal still here with us. She is the reporter at the Detroit News who wrote the story last week about them, these scrap yards. I also want to now welcome Lapresha Barry Daniels, who is the executive director of Detroiters Working for Environmental Justice. This is someone who is really dialed in on the risks that we face as Detroiters to the presence of industry and the inequitable distribution of that risk in the city. You know, if you know this city, you know the parts of the city where this is much worse than others. You may not know all of the things about those parts of the city, the demographics that I think help drive the decision-making in some cases about where these are going to be located. But Lapresha Barry Daniels, it is great to have you here. Welcome to Created Equal.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's start with you talking about the scrapyards and how they play into the greater picture of environmental impact on Detroiters' health from industry. As I was saying, this is something that we all just have lived with for a really long mm-hmm. time here. Air quality, lead exposure, dirty soil. But in your mind, how big a deal are scrap yards and auto yards in this greater risk that we all face?
Yeah, thank you for that. So basically, I would say that Detroit cannot be the dumping ground for all things dirty and nasty.
And it is in many ways.
Exactly. Right? And so when we think about the health impacts of any of these sort of dirty, nasty things that land in our community, then we're thinking about economic health, physical health, mental health as well. And so for economic health, obviously having scrap yards for as far as the eye can see in certain communities is limiting the access and ability for folks to have businesses that the community would like to have in those areas. And so the other way that this is negatively impacting economic health is lowering property taxes and property values. I'm sorry, property values of homes that are near these types of ugly, nasty businesses.
Also, right. Who would want to live near these kind of things?
Exactly.
Especially concentrations of them, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And then in terms of physical health, then we know that noise pollution is an issue mm-hmm. that does impact physical health, so causes sleep disturbances, stress-related illnesses, exacerbates high blood pressure, et cetera. And so there are real physical health challenges that come along with having this type of business in your community. And then sort of the health of our land and our water. We recognize that there are toxic substances that are part of this industry and part of these businesses, and that you can imagine if you are breaking down a car, if you're crushing a car, all of the nasty stuff that's part of that, that is going into the ground. It has to go somewhere. It's going into the air. It's creating dust that is flowing throughout that community that is then impacting health and well-being as well.
Yeah. So a lot of this, in my mind, relates to our history as an industrial behemoth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this city grew up in the early 20th century on the back of industry and manufacturing and the ease with which those things became available to us for you know, an economic engine. And so if you go back 30 or 40 years in Detroit history or even longer, you would have seen more than 10 or 12 auto plants in the city, right? Now I think we only have three left. You would have seen all of the supporting businesses for those auto plants in the city. So it's always been a place where we've had this tension between industry and the environment. What's happened, it seems, is that the large scale industry has gone away in many ways, and it's been replaced with this kind of smaller individual business that is posing a risk to Detroiters. I wonder if you can speak though to that history and how it connects to the history of discrimination in Detroit, that who has always lived in these areas, who has always kind of had to deal with industry in their backyards.
Yeah, so it's always been those that are black and brown. It has always been those that have lower financial resources. Mm-hmm. And often has been those that decision makers, industry, et cetera, have thought would not speak out. And so part of what
Detroiters, so people do it because they can get away with it.
That is the thought, yes. And so part of our work, and I thank Sarah for raising awareness about this issue, part of our work is to do just that. And you mentioned that it becomes sort of normalized if you've grown up in a community where there are scrap yards. Mm-hmm. You don't even notice it. Don't think of it as a risk. Mm-hmm. And so we rely on news outlets to raise awareness about some of these issues, so that folks go, wait, this isn't in other areas. This is just down this one thoroughway. Wait, I don't see this in Midtown. Mm-hmm. I don't see this downtown. I don't see this in premier, in quotes, neighborhoods mm-hmm. in Detroit. And so what makes my neighborhood different? And why can't I have the type of neighborhood I would like to have? Why don't I define what my neighborhood looks like? Why is someone else defining that for me?
Sarah, that seems like that in particular would be a concern of the mayor and the council. I mean, there's been this shift to thinking about, at least, what is going on in neighborhoods mm-hmm. that are kind of far flung from downtown or midtown. Mm-hmm. And this question of, how you decide what economic development looks like in those places, it can threaten the very thing you're trying to do, which is to make the city better for folks.
Well, that's why the mayor is presenting his land value tax plan, right? He's going to double the tax on land. And
this would affect those businesses because
they're mostly vacant land.
Because they're
so
vacant.
It would raise the tax on vacant land like scrap yards and auto shops by 100%. So that I believe is his hope, to diminish and discourage the further opening of these businesses mm-hmm. and the compliance rate. But I'm not sure if there's any recent actions that the mayor has taken beyond that.
Yeah. Lapresha, when you think about the work that Detroit is working for environmental justice is up to, talk about the challenges that we have as Detroiters and where those challenges seem most acute. I think when people think about this issue, often they think of Southwest Detroit mm-hmm. because it is maybe the hardest hit area in the city. But I think a story like this really should suggest the how universal these issues are, that we all are living with some risk from this kind of industry.
Absolutely. And I'll first say that we do think about Southwest Detroit 48217 in particular.
The dog leg, as we call it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
That little part of Detroit that kind of sticks out on the bottom. Yeah,
We do think of that as one of the most burdened communities, and that is true. But one of the challenges there is air pollution, and we know air doesn't stand still because we've all been outside and it's been windy.
Right.
So
goes somewhere.
Yeah, right. It goes somewhere. It doesn't sit over 48217 and just pollute that area. And so it is a universal issue. It is not just in one area. And so there are constant fights for better community and better protections. There is currently a community in Northwest Detroit, Schoolcraft Community Improvement Association, is fighting against expansion of a concrete crusher.
Yes.
There are the scrap yards that are also, I mean, not too far from that area as well. So there are different pockets where there are issues and challenges. And so I would say that, again, bringing awareness about some of these issues through news outlets, et cetera, is really, really important, so that folks recognize that this is an issue and it does impact their health and well-being, and that there are things that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of wins. There was...
I was going to say, what would you say are some of those things?
Yeah, it's always in response to community raising their voices and figuring out who they need to speak to, how to speak to them, and getting things done. Core City Neighborhoods was able to stop a concrete crusher from coming into their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Schoolcraft Community Improvement Association is going to stop this concrete crusher expansion, the operation from expanding. There was Grandmont Rosedale came together and stopped the asphalt mixing plant from coming into their community. And so it really is always grassroots. And holding folks accountable. Sarah already mentioned that there are compliance issues with the scrapyard. Mm-hmm. So we can have policies and processes, but we really have to have enforcement as well. And so the more community knows about what the rules are and how to make sure those rules are enforced, then the better off communities are.
Yeah. So one of the things that I have noticed in Detroit, and this is probably true in other communities as well, the difference often is organization, right, for neighborhoods. And by organization, I don't mean that you have to have something sophisticated or even well-funded. I mean, just having a community association or a block club makes it easier to communicate with the city and with the other folks who are responsible for enforcing code or making decisions about where things are, and that when we work together in our communities, the chance of success of deciding what happens in our neighborhoods goes way up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sarah.
It's like awareness and education, right? That's one of the areas that I found was lacking in places that were most non-compliant, which is like next to the river,
mm-hmm.
where no one really is. And you brought up Southwest. I mean, there's way more than just the concrete crushers and the scrapyards. There's the truck traffic that's going to double because we're going to get a new bridge,
right?
And then we've got displacement from that bridge. There's so much happening in Southwest. I wouldn't take our eyes off of it.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we are going to get to your phone calls and social media comments about scrapyards and other environmental concerns here in the city of Detroit. We'll also keep Sarah Rahal and Lapresha Barry Daniels with us. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and at WDET. We'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Thank you. listening to Created Equal on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined. We're talking about scrapyards and the environmental impact that they have on neighborhoods here in the city of Detroit. We've got two great guests with us. Sarah Hall is a reporter for the Detroit News. She wrote a story last week that quantified the problem that we have with scrapyards, 1,400 of them in the city of Detroit, only 32% of them complying with the city's codes and regulations. Also with us is Lucretia Berry Daniels. She is from Detroiters Working for Environmental Justice, which is an advocacy organization that focuses on the environmental risks that we have because of the presence of industry and other things here in the city of Detroit. We want to hear from you, the listeners, as well. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and at WDET, and we can make you part of the conversation that way. Let's start today with Bob in Detroit. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. So I feel both sides of this. As somebody who's never owned a new car, you're kind of dependent on a lot of these junkyards to get parts for your car.
Huh.
You know, me, my coworkers and stuff, I'd often are like, oh, I need a mirror for, you know, a 94 Accord. Where are you going to find that? You can't just walk into a store and buy something like that, you know? So you become dependent on these scrapyards to buy stuff. And I've been to a lot of them around the city.
Is that right?
And what was that?
Is that right? You're a customer of
yes.
these yards. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
I mean, they're not all run the same, unfortunately. You know, there's a big difference between like Parts Galore on 8 Mile or Ryan's Pick Apart, which are pretty organized, and random dude in Southwest that's got like a yard with 100 cars stuffed into it that you're like, yeah, I think I've got one crawl over pile of stuff back there.
Hmm.
But they are a necessity if you don't have a new car, because sometimes you just cannot get these parts.
Yeah.
That being said, I understand that, like, some of it's really unclear what they do. I'm guessing the ones around Tireman are kind of close to where the Joe Louis Greenway is that you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Some of them just closed up and disappeared. I think the city might have bought people out that were next to the Greenway. But some of those places have no signage. I have no idea what they do. There was a really big one next to the Greenway that I think was like a scrapyard. There was a short story. It was a 62 Chevy wagon. I saw someone get dragged in there last year and went, oh, I know people could use parts off of this. I sent someone to call. The next day, it was already crushed.
Oh.
And they did not want to talk about it. And I assume it had been sitting a long time, didn't have a title. They're just like, get rid of this.
So Bob, this is a fascinating set of details about how this all works and the utility of it to people who don't have new cars. I wonder, though, about your neighborhood. Are these businesses where you live as well? And what effect do you think that has on where you live?
You wouldn't want to live near one, and I understand that completely. It depends how well organized they are, but generally speaking, no. I understand people wouldn't want to live near one. Would I? Probably, honestly. I mean, I have friends who live close to where Ryan's is, and it's helpful them to go around the corner, but Ryan's is pretty clean and well-run compared to most of them. So
yeah.
Versus I've seen places where they're just stacking cars up outside. I can think of random examples around the city where there's just cars and junk outside. Yeah. And then you're facing a big concrete wall of barriers stacked up because they don't want people to break in because people will climb the fence to steal their stuff.
To take stuff.
A lot of these places.
Bob, I love how much you know about this. I love that you called to share that. Sarah, I want to have you react to what Bob is saying, though. This was part of what I was trying to get at earlier is demand, that the demand that drives these businesses is one dimension of it. And I guess I don't know about that demand. I Bob seems much more familiar with it than I am.
Yeah. I mean, Bob, you're the exact person I was trying to find to see, you know, what you were looking for and where do you go.
Connect you with Bob.
Yeah, for sure.
And
trying to understand, you know, what your needs are as a person who comes to the Motor City and is in the Motor City to buy parts and sell parts. The biggest thing I heard was that the amount it takes to scrap a car now is not what it used to cost.
Mm-hmm.
And you used to get a lot more for your money. But, you know, you mentioned Ryan's Pick Apart, you know, I couldn't even find their compliance in the city's list. And they do look beautifully organized. If you go to our story, there's a drone shot over their well-fenced, very organized parking lot. And if you zoom in a little bit closer, you'll see that a lot of them are kind of scattered along the sides of the fences. So I'm not sure if there's any rhyme or reason to why some comply and others don't. And I would like to see more about these businesses and why certain ones are doing well and others are not.
Yeah. Lapresha, Bob's call reminds me also of something you said earlier, which was that these businesses are displacing the possibility for businesses that people who live near these areas would benefit from more, right? The things we don't have access to in Detroit, the things you can't buy around the corner from your house are in part not there because of the prevalence of these scrapyards.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, Sarah heard one thing that stuck out, and I heard one thing that stuck out from what Bob said, which was crime.
Yeah.
when I heard he's like, oh, because people do, right, so.
Because people are climbing the fences and taking from these.
Exactly,
these
so beyond the other things that I mentioned in terms of economic health and physical health and mental health, then there's also increase in crime in the neighborhood because of the presence of these businesses as well, so.
Yeah. Bob, I do really appreciate your call and all of the knowledge you have about this issue. Let's go next to Terrence in Detroit. Terrence, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I just was telling the guitar screener that I love that she's bringing some light to this because there should be some regulation. They are everywhere, and they have expanded over the years. The bigger ones been here 30, 40, 50 years, and trust me, it didn't start off like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they are a byproduct of Motor City. This is the Motor City, and like easily 70% of the commerce to leave the city is car-related. So some of it just stays in our economy.
Right.
And it supports our economy, I mean, to tell you the truth, to an extent, whether if some illicit activity associated with a scrapyard or somebody legitimately a scrapper or retiree that just uses it to, you know, you can make, I mean, I've scrapped a few loads off at the scrapyard and, you know, you can bring a few pennies home if you know how to do that.
So that's interesting to me, Terrence. Tell me about scrapping. What did you scrap? Where did you get it? And how did you know where to take it?
Well, I work in a trash game, so you know, I've been driving garbage trucks for a real long time.
So you know this issue much better than most of us.
Oh yeah, you know. And when I was actually on a truck, I would just, you know, I would get the first pick of the litter, and I was driving the big bulk trucks, the big trucks that picked up the gigantic piles, the car trucks. I was driving them.
Sure.
So, you know, I would get whatever I would, you know, you can take anything from insulated wire, which is any cord off your fan or air conditioner. They pay more per gauge because that's insulated copper in there. They pay for that per pound. I mean, I think at its highest peak, it was $1 a pound.
Yeah.
Copper, you know, you know about that. Aluminum, you know, all that. You could take all that there. You build it up. Me, I have the luxury of having a garage and all of that stuff, and I can build it up over time and take a nice load
take it
in the yard on my pickup. But some guys, they stay out there like a job, 8 hours a day, 9 to 5. And at the end of the week or the end of the day, they take their load to the yard and got a few $100.
Yeah. Terrence, I love that you called and shared all that detail. And those of us who live in the city, I think we know if you set something out for bulk, it doesn't stay long enough for bulk to get it, generally. Somebody comes along and takes it, and I assume they take it to a scrapyard. Sarah, this gets back to how key a part of the local economy this is, and not just at the top of the economy, but all across it, that there are people who are involved in this who are, you know, are fueling the businesses that that we're talking about.
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout out to Terrence for, you know, I think that he's probably accurate that, you know, probably half or, you know, I'd like to see the statistics of how much Detroit actually produces from automotive still, and maybe the other half is food because, my goodness, like restaurants just we're exploding.
Yeah.
But he's not wrong. We're the Motor City, and I'd like to see if New York or California.
So if you didn't have scrap yards or if you didn't have as many scrap yards, what would happen to all of this. I mean, it's waste in some ways, right? Mm-hmm. That's produced from not just the auto manufacturing, but sales, and then, you know, people getting rid of old cars. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we see them popping up in other cities. You know, I didn't look so much to the metro area. I focus on Detroit because we see so many of them in Detroit, and we had a moratorium to stop them. I really wanted to see if that was effective, and that's why we focused on that.
Yeah. Let's go next to Charlie in Delray. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Stephen.
Yeah.
I worked down in Delray in 48209 for like 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scrapyard kind of large at Fort Street in Dearborn that was piling metal fines so high, 20, 30 foot high, mm-hmm. that it caused a slip subsidence, which caused Fort Street to collapse and a cannabis dispensary next to it to get sucked into the hole.
Oh, my goodness. When did that happen?
Oh, about a year ago, and it took them a good 3 to 6 months to repair everything. And that facility has been putting these metal fines into the local environment along the streets and in the air for like 20, 30 years at least. I've complained to EPA, DNR, et cetera, nothing ever gets done.
Huh.
It's a big business. They take in huge pieces of scrap from, you know, all kinds of auto making and manufacturing operations. And I mean, it's and that's just but one of many. You
and
know, I mean,
is,
in Delray, we kind of need reparations. It's, you know, it's been polluted by steel plants and wastewater treatment or cement operations, you know, for years. The soil's just full of arsenic, you know. And
Charlie, I really appreciate your call and, again, the detail about that one particular spot. But Delray, La Precia, is one of the neighborhoods we've been talking about in terms of how prevalent this kind of activity is and the people who have to live with it.
Absolutely. That is one of the hot spots. Again, universal issue, but there are certain communities that are more burdened than others, and Delray is one of those. And we do remain concerned about how this metal is, you know, the toxic substances and byproducts of these metals get into our water, our soil, our air, and Charlie just sort of spoke to that. And then sort of things that we don't even anticipate, like collapse. That's not even one of the things that are usually on our radar. So absolutely appreciate his comment and would like his information so that Detroit's Working for Environmental Justice can get with that community and see what really can be done. Because, again, we've seen some wins when community does work together to sort of make decisions and fight for what they would like their community to look like.
Sarah, we've got about a minute left. I want to have you talk just about what you're up to next. I know you're continuing to look into this issue. It's a big one, and there's lots more there.
Yeah, I didn't give the city a chance to talk about its goals and what it hopes to do, so that might be coming up next. But I really want to contextualize this issue nationally. You know, how do we compare? I gave it the label Scrapyard City. I think I got it from something the mayor had said in the State of the City speech this past year at the train station, but to know if we're the most, if Motor City can handle the reputation of having the most scrap yards, is that the byproduct, like Terrence mentioned?
Right. Is it just a function of who we are? And if so, I guess the question is, then what do you do about it, right?
And
how do you make sure?
Do people come from far to do what he's saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Sarah Wahal of the Detroit News, Lapresha Daniels Barry of Barry Daniels, of Detroiters Working for Environmental Justice. It was great to have both of you here for Created Equal. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That is going to do it for Created Equal. You can listen to recent episodes online at WDET.org and make sure you go and subscribe to our podcast. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Audio editing is by Connor Anderson. Our technical director is Matthew Trevethan, and the music is by Sam Bobian. Our program director is Adam Fox. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University. Thanks for joining, and we will talk again tomorrow.